Good afternoon. Welcome to the New Capital Show. I'm Leo Gold, your host. Great to be with you on a much cooler 99-degree day here in Houston, Texas, coming to you from the studios here in the Montrose. www.newcapitalshow.com is our web address, and I am also on Facebook at, newcapitalshow.com. Leo Gold, newcapitalshow.leogold. Hope you are having a great day and a great week. We'll, of course, be talking about the economy today in various different ways. And the phone number is 713-526-5738. 713-526-KPFT is the number to call. I've got just a whole smorgasbord of things that are on my mind and that I've been tracking and reading, and really in no particular order. It's all just kind of running through my head. I've heard things that are interesting, things that are alarming, things that are maybe hopeful, and I guess I'll start first with the idea that Social Security is a Ponzi scheme. I think that Rick Perry has either said this in print in some book he wrote called Fed Up. And I think it's now been picked up and it's being echoed over on the echo chamber of Rush Limbaugh and Sean Hannity. You know, Social Security's a Ponzi scheme. I can tell you as a financial advisor, I see people every day in my office for whom Social Security is a very, very important source of retirement income. People of all ages, not all ages, but you know, people in their older ages, but people living to all ages, reasonably speaking, not much beyond the hundreds, but you know, and all socioeconomic classes. It was one of the things that was done back when Social Security was created. It was not intended to be a welfare program only for the poor. A decision was made that it would also include, you know, everybody who works, higher income people as well. And I think that was a very, very smart thing to do. It made it an all-inclusive program. It made it something that would bind all Americans together in the common interest of retirement. You may know what a Ponzi scheme is. Of course, the biggest Ponzi scheme ever was, as far as we can tell, the Bernard Madoff affair of a couple years ago, which is still working its way out. There is a trustee who is still trying to recover monies. There have been rulings recently about it. Ponzi scheme is basically an investment fraud. It's an investment fraud when money is taken in from some investors and it's not invested in any kind of reasonable investment. And so there's not going to be any hope of money being returned. In the meantime, the promoter of this scheme grafts off some of the money and continues to bring in new investors to pay off other investors who may be leaving from the investment, though that's not necessarily the case if there are investors who leave. And in fact, in the case of Bernard Madoff, very few investors left until the very end. The idea of a Ponzi scheme is for most people, when they think about it, is new investors coming in and their new money is paying off old investors to leave or paying returns to old investors. And so what I'm trying to get you to focus on here is that part and parcel of a Ponzi scheme is not just that there are new investors coming in, but the key fact is that the investor money is making up for the lack of investment returns. It's really the feature that the money is not going into anything productive that causes it to be a Ponzi scheme, right? Because if the investments themselves that the promoter was putting the money in were producing returns, then there would be money to pay off. So it's the failure to have a viable investment combined with the bad faith of the promoter that creates the Ponzi scheme. And we have the governor of Texas and Rush Limbaugh and that whole echo chamber now claiming that Social Security is a Ponzi scheme. And that claim is based on the fact that we are paying, I'm paying in Social Security benefits, and some of that capital is being used to pay out to existing retirees, current retirees. Well, you could say the same about the entire economy. You know, you could say the same about, I was talking about Apple Computer, Apple Inc. last week. You could say the same thing about Apple Inc. You could say that the entire value of Apple, all $300 billion or so of its market cap, is based on a Ponzi scheme. It's based on the idea that future dollars are going to come in from future sales, which are as yet undefined, not received, yet to materialize, notionally existing somewhere out there in the future. And on that notional basis, the fact that people believe that Apple is going to continue to make products and that 10 years from now they're going to have sales, presto, we have value in a stock right now that people can trade and get cash for. Or a life insurance company. Granted, they have to hold reserves. Or banks, which also have to hold reserves. But think about a bank. If everybody showed up at the bank right now and demanded their money, the bank would not be able to, you'd have a run on the bank. The bank would not be able to fulfill the demand. Right? Because the bank has a certain amount of reserve and the rest of it, it's loaned out. We hope. So is a bank a Ponzi scheme? Is Apple a Ponzi scheme? You know, is the entire market of stocks and bonds in the world of finance a Ponzi scheme because it's based on the idea that there are going to be future events, future receipts of cash? And that those future receipts of cash are being used to capitalize values today? Because in essence, that's what any pension plan relies on. Yes, it relies on some amount of funding, but it also relies on some notion that there are going to be future payments into the plan. And that's going to go for any pension plan, including Social Security, which is what Social Security is. And by the way, Social Security is on a lot better footing than many private pension plans. And yet, the governor of the state of Texas is going out and claiming, among other things that he's claiming, that Social Security is a Ponzi scheme. Social Security is only a Ponzi scheme insofar as any pension plan is a Ponzi scheme. And pension plans can be run well or they can be run poorly. Social Security is actually run pretty well. Very low expenses. Broad coverage, of course. Very conservative investments that have worked out very, very well over the last decades. Much of the investment being in very conservative treasury bonds, which have done very well over the last 20 years. We don't know what the next 20 years are going to be. And the conclusion from Rick Perry and Rush Limbaugh is that this is a Ponzi scheme when it's nothing of the sort. There is no ill will on the part of a promoter, and there is no malfeasance in the investment side. It is a meat and potatoes pension plan. What bothers them at the heart of it, is that it is a national pension plan administered by the government, and that's it. That's all. Now, I am not saying pension plans don't need to go through adjustments and actuarial figures don't need to change. And those who say Social Security as it was created with whatever details of retirement ages and payout percentages and all this that were established in the 1930s, that those can never change, I don't agree with that either. Any pension plan, any retirement plan, any financial plan must be revisited regularly. But that doesn't make them Ponzi schemes with ill intent on the part of the administrators or the promoters and malfeasance and imprudence in the investments. That would be a Ponzi scheme. And this is the way that it is going with that wing of American politics. They have a very big megaphone, and they can basically say, and they basically do say what they want, regardless of the factual underpinning, foundation of what they're saying. regardless. Social Security is a Ponzi scheme. Global warming is a figment of the human imagination, and there are scientists who are emerging every day to discount it and disprove it. Right? This is Rick Perry's statement. Evolution is just an idea, not even a theory. We're teaching creationism in Texas schools along with it because it's as valid scientifically. These are statements. These are statements that are coming from this political figure and others like him. This country grew into strength. And of course, much of that strength has been misused in many episodes of American history. But when we look clearly at the strengths of our country, we know what they are. They are born out of the reason of the founding fathers, people like Thomas Jefferson, scientists, farmers, classicists, architects, attorneys, all of them, not all of them, most of them, many of them. People of the mind, people of ration, people of reason. This is the source. These are the sources. Other wisdom sources in this country, Native Americans, their intuitive and deep love and understanding of the land, their affinity with it, an appreciation that too often has been ignored by our larger society, but which lives on in many segments and among many of us. And what are we hearing in that front from this other political wing? They want to do away, literally, eradicate, shut down, and they are bragging that they want to shut down the Environmental Protection Agency. An agency that was formed in the early 1970s under a Republican president, Richard Nixon, almost 200 years after the founding of this country, after the country had been logged, its lakes and rivers despoiled, its air polluted, we got an EPA. And the EPA has done its job. I got to tell you, in many places, not in all, but in many places where EPA is permitted to act, EPA has cleaned up this country in many, many different ways. We got a lot farther to go. The greatness of this country was founded in the ability to engineer. The greatness of this country is founded in our academies, dating back to places like Harvard University, that these conservatives so love to denigrate. They love to denigrate people who've gone and gotten education, who've gone and gotten the best educations, our best scientists, our best academies. They've taken something as noble, as old, as permanent, as important as Harvard University. And they have tried to turn it into a bad word. And it's not just Harvard. When they denigrate Harvard, they denigrate all the universities. Iowa State. Even Texas A&M. You can find an article from Bloomberg. I don't know if I have it. But out in Bloomberg this week is an opinion from a Texas A&M climatologist, atmospheric scientist. Same university as Rick Perry, who attended Texas A&M and got C's and D's. A professor of atmospheric science at Texas A&M comes out and says, hey, climate change is real. Our numbers show it. It is not helpful for Rick Perry and others to make misstatements of fact. So what is going on is a profound, profound abuse of the right to a public voice. When you stand on a public stage and you state lies, and you state matters not based on fact, based on your own opinion, you do a profound disservice, and a profound disservice is being done. Now, the question is, will the majority of this country go for it? Regardless of what your economic circumstances are right now, how you're feeling, will you go for that? Will you allow it? Will you fall for it? And, of course, that is what is so critical to the right-wing effort to destroy the education system. Because if you can destroy the education system, you can destroy the minds. And if you can destroy the minds, you can get them to believe anything you say. Rebuilding this country will require people thinking like Jefferson, people thinking like Edison, people thinking like Steve Jobs, people thinking like climate scientists, people attending Harvard, people attending Iowa State. It will require a rebuilding of the American population through education, through reason, through knowledge, through open-mindedness, through willingness to consider new information at all times, to revisit hypotheses and prove or disprove them. It will require scientific method. It will require strict financial analysis and an understanding of return on capital and return on investment. It will require properly costing our inputs. We will not rebuild this country by shutting down the EPA. Which, by the way, if you really wanted to create more jobs in this country, you would let EPA promulgate more regulations. Because what happens when EPA says, hey, your power plant is old, the smokestacks and the boilers and the burners and all that, it's leaking, it's not good, it's not going to pass muster, and we have just passed a regulation that says you're going to have to upgrade it. What happens, everybody? Does that destroy jobs? No, that makes jobs. Orders have to be placed for new boilers and burners and smokestacks. New ones purchased from companies where people are working. We progressives should be standing up and saying, every time they say EPA is destroying jobs, the job-destroying EPA, we should just say, no, EPA creates jobs. It's the job-creating EPA. That's it. That's the response. It's very simple. We shouldn't be going, oh, well, no, EPA creates jobs. You want to remediate a Superfund site? Hey, that takes a lot of money and that takes a lot of activity to remediate a Superfund site, to clean up a river, to clean up lakes. EPA creates jobs. Regulations create jobs. Intelligent regulations. Things that yield returns. We don't want just busy work. Yes, I agree with that. 713-526-5738. The changes that we make are going to have to be made by each of us personally. It has to start with each of us. What we think and what you think, I've always said, is absolutely critical. We can't get frustrated that it's all going to get fixed, and it's going to get fixed by attacking and trying to change everybody's mind immediately. It's going to have to start with each of us and how we think and the way we live. There are those right now. I heard this really, really scary interview on Fresh Air about this new apostolic reformation movement of evangelicals who were around Rick Perry, who were a prominent presence at his prayer rally of several weeks ago, whose goal is to take over all facets of American life. And the way the future is going to unfold is, and what's critical to the future unfolding and the Messiah coming again, is the Jews have got to get converted. God. This is like Rick Perry's base. Well, I'm a Jew. You guys are going to have to work really, really, really hard, especially because I'm also a Buddhist now. I'm a Buddhist Jew, and, you know, for you guys to get the country going, you're going to really, really, I mean, I don't know what you're going to have to do. I guess you're going to have to torture me, because I'm just not going to go where you want me to go. So if that's your plan to get the country working, not to do engineering, not to use reason, not to listen to scientists, not to listen to economists and employ sound economic theory, sound regulations, not to set up a valuable and cooperative public-private sector that works effectively together, Your agenda is you got to convert the Jews. So the Messiah comes again. You know. So I don't know what people are going to go for. I wouldn't predict it anymore. It's going to take all of us individually figuring out where we stand. I had a great afternoon yesterday. I came home and my two kids were there. We went swimming in the pool. And I thought people are just going to have to chill out and think clearly and spend some private time with themselves and some private time with the people they love. And that's where wisdom is going to come from. I don't want to, you know, Hataji is so much better at this kind of thing than me. But, you know, she's right. So much, she is very wise, and so much of what she says is so right, which is that, you know, for political change to happen, personal change has to happen. And it's hard to know when people get into economic distress what sort of personal salvation and what things they're going to seek personal salvation in. I hope that people are going to seek salvation in education, reason, community, ecology, peace, and love, tolerance and acceptance for all ways and all cultures. That's, to me, the way into the future. But I appreciate very well that there are others who see other ways with which I don't agree. And anyway, we're going to take a short break. When we come back, we'll take your call, 713-526-5738, 526-KPFT. It's the New Capital Show. We will be back in just a moment.
One of these days, I'm gonna sit down and write a long letter to all the good friends I've known. And I'm gonna try to thank them all for the good times together. Though so apart, we've grown. One of these days, I'm gonna sit down and write a long letter to all the good friends I've known. One of these days, one of these days, and it won't be long,
it won't be long,
it won't be long,
it won't be long.
And I'm going to thank that old.
Welcome back. I picked that song today because I was listening to it last night, and I was thinking, yeah, that's what we should all be doing. We should all be sitting down and writing long letters to all of our old friends that we know. People who've been in our lives in the past and we haven't communicated with, and say, what's going on? What are you thinking? What's up with you? And here's what's up with me, and here's where we need to be communicating. And I know people are doing it over Facebook, but maybe we should all be sitting down like Neil Young says and writing long letters to the people we know and love. What are you thinking? This is where I'm at. This is where I think we need to go. This is what's up in my life. This is what's working and what's not working. That may be the best place for positive change to start. But in the meantime, we'll take this. Associated Press reports the other day, a judge, federal judge on Tuesday, blocked key provisions of Texas's new law requiring a doctor to perform a sonogram before an abortion, ruling the measure violates the free speech rights of both doctors and patients. The judge is Sam Sparks. U.S. District Judge Sam Sparks upheld the requirement that sonograms be performed, but he struck down the provisions requiring doctors to describe the images to their patients and requiring women to hear the descriptions. So he upheld the requirement that a sonogram must be performed. But again, they don't have to have a conversation about it. The law, doctor and patient don't. The law made exceptions for women who were willing to sign. Sparks, the judge, questioned whether the Republican-controlled Texas legislature was trying to, quote, permanently brand women who are victims of sexual assault. So there is reason out there in the judiciary. Sparks wrote that forcing doctors to discuss the results with a patient who may not want to listen compels physicians to advance an ideological agenda with which they may not agree, regardless of any medical necessity and irrespective of whether the pregnant women wish to listen. Sparks was particularly troubled by the requirement that victims of sexual assault or incest sign statements attesting to that fact. Remember, this is what the Texas State Legislature approved and was signed by Governor Rick Perry. These types of onerous requirements. Victims of sexual assault or incest would have to sign statements attesting to the fact in order to get around the provision. That would require women to disclose, as Sparks wrote, extremely personal, medically irrelevant facts that will be memorialized and records that are, at best, semi-private. Sparks concludes, it is difficult to avoid the troubling conclusion that the Texas legislature either wants to permanently brand women who choose to get abortions or views these certifications as potential evidence to be used against physicians and women. Governor Rick Perry, who's running for president, was critical of Tuesday's ruling. Every life lost to abortion is a tragedy, And today's ruling is a great disappointment to all Texans who stand in defense of life, said Perry. I've heard Ron Paul recently talk about life, how important life is, and we know, again, what life they're talking about. Only human life. This gang has very, very little regard for any other forms of life on this planet. When they talk about life, they mean only the lives of Homo sapiens. Right? We know Rick Perry likes to brag about shooting coyotes when he's jogging. Only human life. What about the lives of sharks whose populations are down 90%? That information, that fact, doesn't even register for Rick Perry. Not even in his mind, and he doesn't even care. Ecological balance is not important to Rick Perry. But interfering with the rights of women to have an abortion, to not bring into this world a child that they do not want to have, a human child, that's a tragedy. Loss of 90% of the shark population, that's not even information. 713-526-5738. First up is Teresa. Teresa, welcome.
Hi, how are you, Leo?
Doing good. What's on your mind?
Well, I just want to tell a little story. First of all, a couple years back, I decided to go with a friend and highway blog, and we took a sign that said, "Peace is patriotic." And we stood on up over the highway up in the spring area, and somebody pulled up in a truck. We had been there about maybe 20 minutes. Somebody pulled up in a truck, jumped out, pulled out a penknife, and tore a huge hole in our banner, and then jumped in this truck and drove away.
Yeah, so, they were aggravated by the idea that peace is patriotic. Imagine.
Anyway, I just wanted to say I'm going to Washington, D.C. at the end of September, and I would be happy to carry any postcards or petitions to legislators, especially if you wanted to put something on your website and have your listeners sign on to, you know, whether they think that funding of the EPA is useful or something about the tar sands pipeline. I know my congressperson says that, he wanted to defund any EPA money that had to do with, what did he say?
Teresa, I got to tell you, I sit on the board of a local environmental nonprofit focused on air quality, Air Alliance Houston. Mm-hmm. It does great work, and through that group, I've had the pleasure to make the acquaintance of Al Armendariz, who is the regional head of the EPA, Region 6, I think we are. And Al Armendariz has worked in industry. He is a PhD in environmental engineering, and I don't want to get his resume wrong, but basically that's his pedigree. And you could not find a better spoken, more intelligent, better intentioned, more reasonable administrator regulator than Al Armendariz. So when you meet that kind of person, you're like, what are these people talking about? They want to shut down the EPA. You know, just because it has some power to make positive change in our country. Mm-hmm. And I'm sick of it. I mean, I'm tired of it. And that's part of the reason why, I mean, I could come on this show and just say over and over, the EPA is good. The EPA is good. The EPA can make jobs. The EPA can promulgate regulations that are important to our economic future. And I could just repeat that over and over, and I'd be doing a service here on KPFT. Because, you know, you're not going to hear it anywhere else except here on the radio. You know? So we do a very, very valuable service when we speak truth to power. And the EPA is, I think, one of the great success stories in America.
But I think that we don't have enough of a voice. Not enough people hear the information that we have. And, I mean, we hear, my congressperson, Ted Poe, and he said, I mean, he sends out newsletters.
Yeah, he's bought and paid for by special interests.
He says today the House of Representatives passed a bipartisan vote 249-177, an amendment that eliminates funding for the EPA to be used to implement, administer, or enforce any statutory or regulatory requirements pertaining to emissions of greenhouse gases.
So he
doesn't really want them to regulate or enforce things. But, I mean, he wouldn't admit that he wanted to shut the whole EPA down. He says it's only for this.
Well, that's, listen, that's what's coming out of the mouths of Bachman and Perry and probably all of them. I mean, they literally are saying, day one, the first thing they'll do is shut down the EPA. I mean, that's going to fix the economy, shutting down a bureau that's probably got $1 billion or so budget, is totally outgunned and can't put in place really the regulations that even need to be put in place. I mean, this is insanity. So, Teresa,
I want to say one other thing. He also says on August 30th, he says, I will continue to support proven methods of addressing our economic problems. History has confirmed two things, a quote, spending stimulus, end quote, does not work, and tax cuts are the only proven road to recovery. Presidents Kennedy, Reagan, and Bush all proved that when they cut taxes and let Americans decide how to spend and invest their money.
Great, Teresa. Got to move along.
Bye.
Thanks for the call. Robert Shiller, who is one of our nation's top economists, out yesterday or the day before with an article in which he says what needs to happen is we need to have a tax increase, mostly on the wealthy, and that money needs to go toward paying for a new stimulus, which is to say, we're not just going to raise taxes indefinitely. We're going to have a specific tax-raising program. The money's going to go specifically for stimulus. Call it infrastructure stimulus and local stimulus. I mean, we know we could use some here in Houston to fix the broken water mains. His point being that that is an effective way to goose aggregate demand. Remember, we didn't pay for the wars that we've engaged in over the last 10 years. They never said we're going to have a tax increase and it's going to pay for those wars. Bush did the opposite. He cut taxes. And the wars were put on credit cards. And those credit card balances were run up, mostly under George W. Bush. From the wars, from the recession, from the tax cuts themselves. That is where our deficit has come from, and our debt has built off of that. What Shiller is saying is the rich have the money, they're not spending it, they're not going to spend it, it needs to be taxed and used specifically for stimulus. That is one of our greatest living economists, Robert Shiller, who has been right about just about everything. Stock prices, of course, he's been right about house prices. He's been the leading economist discussing the housing bust. So who do you want to take it from? Rick Perry, a C&D student at Texas A&M University, who, fine, went in the Air Force. I'm not quibbling with that. That's his credential. He's a pilot. Or Robert Shiller, a professional economist. Of course, Rick Perry and the rest of the Republicans will denigrate Robert Shiller because he's an academic. Shame on him. Shame on that intelligent man. Shame on that smart man. Oh, he's got a degree. He's evil. Next up, Joe on line two. Hey, Joe, welcome to the New Capital Show.
Hi, how are you doing?
I'm good. May not sound like it, but I am.
It definitely doesn't sound like it. Well, it's good to talk to you today. And I just wanted to give, a different perspective as far as, public sector spending, in regards to the EPA. Just listening, I can tell that you're quite passionate about it. But I guess I take a quite just a little different perspective. And it's just, my fear of over-regulation. It's just like where do we draw the line that we have people on the outside of businesses coming in and telling them how they can run businesses? And I understand that this does create jobs because they're going to have to if they go into these companies and these companies have to innovate and purchase new things and build new things, I understand they're going to have to hire more people. But what happens when they can't afford these things?
And Joe, I hear this all the time from those guys. I hear all the time about how government is intruding into the lives of Americans. And Rick Perry talking about the first thing he's going to do is make government irrelevant to your life. Mm-hmm. And I really don't know what the hell they are talking about. I am a businessman. I'm in a regulated industry. I'm a financial advisor. I have to register with the SEC and provide documents to them. I've got to pay some money every year to the SEC to help fund it. Okay? I've got to register with the state of Texas. I've got to keep an incorporation. Big deal. I mean, how much time do you think all this takes? I got to write a check. I've got to pay some taxes. I mean, these guys are acting like nobody can open a business in this country. You can open a business in any state by going on to startupbusiness.com.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, it is such a preposterous farce to talk about how overregulated we are in this country compared to other countries. I've got a friend who's moved down to Argentina. He's trying to start a business in Argentina.
Yes.
Let me tell you. It's nuts, the idea that we are overregulated in this country. I don't see it, I think it's a bunch of BS, most people who talk about it. I really don't think regulation impacts people in any kind of meaningful way. Now, listen, if you're running an oil rig in the middle of Gulf of Mexico, all the regulation does is it says, here are rules. I mean, let's remember what regulation is. It's basically a legal contract. It basically says you may operate this business, this thing. You are entering into a legal contract to be regulated, essentially, by the government. If you violate these rules, you will have broken the contract. So really what regulation does is it sets up the ability for the government to claim breach of a contract.
Mm-hmm.
It's really all it does. And all that means is that we have a set of rules under which business should function. I'm fine with that. I'm a businessman. I don't have a problem with it. So
yeah,
when I hear belly aching about regulation, I say, you just must not like the rules, buddy. You must be trying to get out of the rules.
I guess what you know, I was hearing from your discussion is that, you know, you're a big proponent of this because you believe that it's going to create jobs. And like I said, I do agree that, you know, to some extent there will be additional job creation, you know, because of companies have to you know, abide by these new regulations. But I feel like, you know, I guess what I'm hearing is that, you know, you're relying and you believe that the government can create jobs. And what I believe is that government doesn't create jobs. And I'm sure you've heard this before, and there's, you know, economic, you know, and people who believe that they can only create the climate and the conditions for jobs to be created.
I agree with that.
And I just feel like we're at a time right now that we cannot deny our $14.2 trillion deficit. We just cannot turn a blind eye. We cannot keep kicking the can down the road. And unfortunately, some things are going to happen. Some great programs that the United States funds are going to have to be cut. And it's not that we want that to happen. It's not that it's something that, you know, we would, you know, like
well,
to see
happen. Joe, what's the biggest U.S. program?
I don't know the specifics.
It's called the U.S. military. Are you okay with that?
Well, no.
You're not.
I
you don't want to cut the military.
No, I don't want to cut the military. I think that's essential to being the United States.
No, I didn't say eradicate it. I said cut it. Are you okay cutting it?
Well, I think
substantially, meaningfully.
I feel like you know the time and the, you know, the climate that we're in right now. As far as, you know, there's just the conditions in the Middle East and what's going on in the world. I don't think right now is just the time. I mean, we can cut back and we can be realistic in the things that we do, but we're the world.
Hey, Joe, what return on investment have you gotten from the war in Vietnam? What's been your personal return? Let me ask you this. What's been your return on investment from, your contribution to the war in Iraq? What have you gotten back from that?
What I've gotten at is that I'm a citizen of the world's largest, the world's most powerful country in the world.
We'll see about that.
I know. But what keeps us a big part of that is our military power. That is what makes us formidable and respectable.
My friend, that's exactly what the British thought back in the late 19th century when they sent their navies everywhere. Fifty years later, they were dead broke, out of wind, out of gas on their backs. They had spent themselves silly all over the world doing exactly what we're doing.
I mean, we have to take note of what's going on in China. They're going to have a modern.
Yeah, you know what they're doing in China? They're manufacturing, Joe. They're making lots of business. They have lots of jobs.
They have a
relatively small military. We have thousands and thousands and thousands of nuclear warheads, and we have to maintain them. They've got 50. But you want to keep spending. Is that right? Do I have that right?
No, you don't. Okay, you have that right to an extent. What I'm saying is we need to be realistic, and we need to
I'm waiting. I'm waiting.
I'm waiting
for you to be realistic, Joe, and you're not. You're refusing to be realistic. You're being the same old delusional.
This is another note, but I have to make comment about it.
All right.
It's because I have a certain perspective, and I have a point of view, but that does not make me closed-minded.
No, I don't sense you are.
And what really baffles my mind is sometimes maybe I'm getting, and it's because you're passionate about your country, you're passionate about what you believe in, and I understand
damn
that.
Damn straight.
And I respect that.
Yeah.
But sometimes, you know, I've just recently started listening to this radio. I came to a graduate school around here in the Houston area. So, I'll turn on your station and listen every now and then. But basically what I'm trying to say is that sometimes when I'm hearing you talking, I kind of feel like you make people who don't agree with your point of views, you label them as being closed-minded. But to me, that makes you closed-minded. You know, if you're going to be a proponent of peace,
closed-minded, Joe, means not willing to accept new information. That's what closed-minded means. And so when I call someone closed-minded, that's essentially where I'm going with that. I'm saying we have new facts and new information that are apprehensible. And apprehensible, I use to mean they are. I use it in the same way Hegel used to use it when he was alive. Hegel talked about things being apprehensible. They can be apprehended. They are apparent. They speak for themselves. The facts and the information as they appear.
Okay. Well, then if you believe
such
that.
As 99% of atmospheric scientists saying we got a problem, that becomes an apprehendable piece of information. And so when somebody denies that, I say, your mind is closed. You're not open to that information.
Okay,
now, that has to be factual. It has to be fact-based. It has to be reason-based.
If you believe that, if you truly believe that,
right?
Well then I've heard, you know, in the past, you talking about, you know, the government needs to spend more, they need to create jobs, you know what I mean?
I didn't say the government should spend more.
Public sector
spending. I said spending needs to be rearranged. That's what I've always said. I haven't said it should be more. I've said that we've misinvested. Don't get me wrong here. Hang on. You've not heard me. I've said that we are spending in the wrong places, getting no return. I'm not saying we need to spend more. I haven't really talked about magnitude. I've said we need to spend more on some things and less on others. Now, that net spending could be neutral.
Okay. Well, you know, the biggest fact of it all, of I feel like the most alarming fact that we all need to take into consideration is like I've already mentioned before, is a $14.2 trillion deficit that our country currently possesses.
Thanks, Joe. And remember, that deficit, the vast majority of it was created between the years 2000 and 2008.
I got to run.
It's great to have you. Great call.
Right.
Thanks so much. Alan, we're running out of time here. Alan or Alan? I'm sorry, I don't know which it is.
Alan. Good day, Leo.
Hey, Alan. Good.
This Buddhist says, Nam-myoho-renge-kyo.
Nam-myoho-renge-kyo.
To the profound law of cause and effect, meaning nothing that's real exists independently of everything else.
That's correct.
Suppose we did not need oil. We wouldn't have to need resource wars. We could cut the military budget in half. So I would like to get your evaluation of Harry Braun's Phoenix Project. He's proposing constitutional amendments, a hydrogen, solar hydrogen economy.
I'm familiar with him, and I support many of the things and many of the ideas.
I'm not
given a complete blessing here. I'm just saying very good ideas, very creative ideas, ideas that should be paid attention to.
He's been updating it there at the
Braun2012.us. Great. Thanks. Great
Thank
to have you.
You
along. Okay. I want to see if we can get a few more calls in quickly. And CW is next. Hey, CW, welcome.
Well, happy fiscal new year, sir.
Thank you. What's on your mind?
I just wanted to call and say I agree with you. I think the art of conversation is so null and void in this country that when folks cannot come to a table or a bar stool and agree to disagree, we've really lost what we are as a civil society. You don't have to, continue to throw money at the problem, meaning, spreading freedom around the world is what the Romans did, right? And so you start to learn all these different things, and you got to pull back. You got to
not for my people.
Well, that's a whole other horrible story in our history as a human race. And what I have to kind of come to grips with is, we're all breathing oxygen as far as Democrat, Republican, whatever you believe.
Yep, drinking the same water and so on.
Yes, or fluoride. We got to get that out. But my research has kind of gone to a different plateau, and some people kind of roll their eyes at it, but a lot of people have been experiencing it. There is coming a polar shift. There is going to be an ET intervention to save us from ourselves.
CW, always going to be change. ET interventions and everything.
I promise you, brother, it's not coast to coast.
I know.
It's for real.
All right, great to have you. Thanks, CW.
Thank you.
Look, change is always going to come, and we don't know what the change is going to be. Events are going to happen, and as I've been saying the past few weeks, events are going to surround beliefs, and beliefs are going to change one way or another. Real quick, let's see if we can squeeze George in. George, welcome.
Yes, EPA, the Galveston Bay, one of our greatest natural resources right here.
Yes.
We've got a Superfund site that has subsided into the Houston Ship Channel.
Yep.
And it's polluted the whole bay. Yep. You're not even supposed to eat more than 8 ounces of speckled trout or sea.
But they want to get rid of the EPA.
And people want to get,
it's crazy.
It's nuts.
Nuts.
Look at your pipelines. They're blowing up.
Right.
Look at if we'd had a blowout preventer, like told Norwegians and everybody,
right.
We wouldn't have had that accident last year. You got this blowdown drum down in Texas City that killed 15 million.
George.
It also saves lives.
George, here we are 2 years after the banks blowing up with lack of regulation and so many other financial agencies blowing up with lack of regulation. And what is the lesson that Michelle Bachmann and Rick Perry have gained from the financial meltdown? Oh, let's get rid of the regulator. Let's not fix the regulator or tune it up or make it better or devote resources to making EPA an even better EPA or an SEC an even better SEC. We're going to shut the whole sucker down.
We spent months down there. These plants around here that are grandfathered in and everything, we spend months building, working on those. People like myself, I'm an electrician, and trying to bring them up.
Does it make work for you?
That's correct.
That's right.
Correct. It makes work.
It makes work.
We live in a state that is in the top three in land, soil, air, and water pollution.
Yeah.
That's what that's brought to us. And I fish a lot avidly in Galveston Bay, and I can't even eat the fish.
Great, George. Great to have you.
You bet.
Listen, what happens, folks, when you're 4 and 6 year old, which I have, messed the kitchen up totally after the meal? What does it take to get it back clean again? It takes work. That is why EPA makes jobs. And so it should be very simple to all of us. Our regulatory infrastructure, infrastructure is dilapidated in this country. Let's fix it. If we fix it, you're going to make a lot of jobs. And it doesn't have to be government that's making new bureaus, or it doesn't even have to be government that's doing the hiring. Government simply needs to promulgate these rules, and the market will respond to it. Doyle, that's it, right? We're out, correct?
That's right.
All right. Bruce and Philip, I'm sorry that we have run out of time. We had a great spirited discussion. It was great to have everybody calling today. I'll be back next week, and we will continue this discussion for a long time to come. It's the New Capital Show. Coming up, KPFT Local News. Al Jazeera News will follow at 4:30. And, of course, Democracy Now! At 5 o'clock. Stay tuned.